You are listening to episode 234 of This is Type 1. Today, we are talking about how diabetes has evolved through the decades and since the discovery of insulin. So, Jesse, take it away.
So, for this episode, we're going to go decade by decade, starting with the 1920s, about how insulin and diabetes discoveries have evolved up until today. So, starting in the 1920s, insulin was first, quote unquote, discovered in 1921. And diabetes actually started being referred to as diabetes and what it is instead of sugar sickness or sweet pea or anything that actually doesn't have a medical term. It actually started being referred to as diabetes in this decade. In the 1930s, we actually had a lot of discoveries, realizations, and a lot of epiphanies within the medical community when it comes to diabetes. In 1935, the scientists realized that there were two types of diabetes instead of just one. So type one being where your pancreas completely fails and type two where your pancreas partially fails. In 1936, they discovered how to create long-acting insulin, which was huge for everybody who is on long-acting insulin. And in 1938, NPH insulin was marketed. So this was more pharmaceutical use. It wasn't just for like experimenting. It was actually used as a prescription drug at this point and was able to be offered to the general public who had doctor's prescription for it. In the 1940s, there really wasn't a ton of things that were happening because of the war really prevented anybody from doing any, like World War II, for everybody who needs a little context, prevented anything from being done medically wise because everybody was just trying to help with war efforts and war advancements. In the 1950s, insulin was infused with zinc to make long-acting insulin last up to 12 hours actively in the body, and that was in 1952. Also in 1952, oral medication was created for type 2 diabetes, and this was not metformin. This was, I couldn't even find the name of it, to be honest with you. That's how little it was used. And then new reusable injectable needles were also created for insulin delivery. In the 1960s, urine strips were invented for blood sugar testing. And this was 40 years after insulin was created, and people didn't even know how to test for blood sugars. And this, in 1960s, was when the starting point was given for blood sugar testing on a constant and frequent basis by patient. It took up to 15 minutes between sample collection to get a reading, meaning your blood sugar could completely change in 15 minutes from when you took your sample to when you actually got what it was 15 minutes ago. And it didn't give a direction if you were going high or low or anything like that. So just think about that for a minute. That's kind of incredible from where everything started, but at the same time, it's very crazy to think about. And then single syringe insulin was created by Becton Dickinson in 1961. This was for injection, so you just had to change out the needle. You didn't have to change out the insulin every time you had to use insulin. And then the first portable glucose meter was invented by Anton H. Clemens in 1969. So within that decade, we went from just having single-use urine strips invented for blood sugar testing to not only us landing on the moon, but also the first portable glucose meter being invented. Not widely available, yes, but at the same time, it was still there.
Do you know if when they started the reusable syringes, like I know at first you had to actually like sharpen them.
Yeah.
And you had to boil them to sterilize them and you had to sharpen them because the more you use them, they created barbs. And so it would become increasingly painful to inject.
Yeah.
I tried to find like an accurate, I realized no one's done like a timeline, like an infographic timeline of like what diabetes is or anything like that. So finding like something that was accurate to like narrowing it down to one scientist, one person, one date specifically was really hard to do. But in my understanding, people kind of went and transitioned between reusable needles to single-use needles around the 50s, 60s time period when more like industrialization was happening within the US so that they could get single-use needles in there instead of multi-use sharpening needles in there.
I wonder if that was more in the actual medical field and less so for consumers, because it would have been really expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I would expect so because of how new like single-use needles were back then. And also the best equipment will always go to like hospitals, medical fields first before it will go to like the general public and everything like that.
I mean, a great example is the homemade wind C test machine that you didn't know about until just a couple episodes ago.
Literally no idea.
I have no idea when that first came out to market, but I found out about it from my endocrinologist. And like up until the point that I found out about it, it was you have to go into the doctor's office to get a blood test for your A1C. And I was like, how did this happen?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. Okay. So then in the 70s, first needle free insulin delivery system was created. So this was the first pump was created. It cost over $7,875. And that's today's money.
Oh, that's in today's money.
Yeah. I calculated for inflation and that's how much it cost.
That is surprisingly close to current pump cost.
Yeah. And you would think that current pump cost would go down with all of the medical advances, but I guess not. But that's fine too.
Well, I was expecting it to be like, you know, $20,000 in today's money if it was back in 1979, because that's a long time ago.
I know. I kind of want them to make a museum of all of these artifacts and everything one day. Like, I think that'd be awesome. Anyways, but that was in 1979. So at the end of the decade, they were really like for the 1970s, this is what they were focusing on. And also the first hemoglobin A1C test was created in 1979, which is really interesting to me that they did a lot of readings, new monitors, the first portable monitor for your blood sugar testing, and then didn't have like an A1C test until the 70s, which you would expect maybe they would have one earlier. And then the 80s, the Cold War was happening. So again, there wasn't much that was going on with production of insulin and stuff like that. And then in the 1990s, metformin was approved by the FDA as an oral medication for type 2 diabetics in 1995.
And 1995 is also when I was diagnosed on September 19th. And I'm not actually sure where, like how I remember that, or like it's probably on some kind of document from the doctor who diagnosed me, but that's the date that I have tattooed on my hand. So, or not my hand, my wrist. So yeah, I was diagnosed in 95. So I asked my mom and she doesn't remember which short acting insulin I was on before Humalog, because Humalog wasn't developed until 19, or at least released to market until 1996. That's called Lispro, which is the generic name for it. So insulin Lispro, that's what Humalog is. And that was created by Dr. DeMarchi through Eli Lilly. So anybody who uses Humalog, Humalin, I think the super fast acting nowadays is called Lumiev. Those are all Eli Lilly and they're all based on Lispro. So I have no idea what I was on before then, but it was probably regular or whatever, like the thing that, you know, diabetics were on back then. I do remember I probably was on NPH at some point. And then I was also on a different long acting. It was either, I think we tried Lantus for a bit. What was, I think the other one was Levemir. Lantus and Levemir were the two long acting ones. One of them worked great. One of them was terrible. But what I remember was my mom would mix the insulin in her hand. She'd roll the vial in her palms to, I guess, warm it up and also mix the insulin. And I always remember the clacking sound of the vial against her wedding ring. Like that is one of the most vivid memories I have of the early years was the rolling of the insulin vials and the clacking against her ring.
That's actually so cool to think about, like how different it's come. Like,
yeah,
that's really interesting. That kind of reminds me of like, you know, the glucagon shots that you can give when you're incapacitated or going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Like the old school ones where you'd have to like not rub them together, but you'd have to like mix the powder and the liquid and then draw the syringe back and everything.
Well, I have no personal experience doing that, but I'm sure I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Start of the 2000s. Well, actually, backing up to 1999. 1999 was my first year at Panther Camp. So that was the very first year I went to diabetes camp, and I ended up going for 20 years at that point. But moving on to the 2000s, I got my first insulin pump in 2002, and it was Thanksgiving 2002. Prior to that, I had had two different low blood sugar seizures, and the first of those happened in Australia, which was probably not fun for my parents, but we went on a trip to Australia in May of 2002, kind of a perk for my dad working for where he worked, and we got to go with him. And I was not on a pump at that time. I was not on a CGM. CGMs, I don't think, existed at that time. And so they had to rely on the old school, check your blood sugar on a meter, you know, multiple daily injections. And I had a seizure in Australia. And I think that was probably one of the first times when my parents were like, we need something better to manage her blood sugars. And I think that probably started the process to get me on an insulin pump. And then I had a second seizure. I'm not sure on the timing of the second seizure. I do remember the fire department coming. My sister had to call the fire department and I got a teddy bear out of the whole thing. Not sure where the teddy bear is anymore, but I remember getting a teddy bear. And then because I got a pump in 2002, I ended up being basically the guinea pig at camp for all of the camp nurses to learn how an insulin pump worked, which is hilarious. So like I was like that first year at camp, I think 2003, I would have been, I think, the first and only camper that year that had an insulin pump. So I was like, I'm the guinea pig. It was fun.
That's so cool. That's crazy to think about because I was born in 2002. And there weren't, okay, so my understanding that was that CGMs were in research at this point and they weren't necessarily like, again, being used by the public. It was more so like guinea pig, like guinea pigs, and just a select few were able to be on sensors because they were the biggest and brightest thing.
I think the first Dexcom came out commercially in 2007. I could be wrong on the year. I remember when I interviewed Adam Brown, he used to be the senior editor for Diatribe. He was like one of the very first people to get on the Dexcoms because he was just on top of everything. Right. I think it was as early as 2007.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, but I was born in 2002. And then moving on to the 2010s.
I was a latecomer to Dexcom or any CGM. So first pump was 2002. It wasn't until 2015 that I got on a Dexcom. And that was the first ever CGM that I had gotten on. And I always laugh about this. My primary reason for not wanting to get on a CGM until then was I didn't want to rotate two sites. And now looking back at that, like that is the dumbest reason ever. Because one of them is on for 10 days and it doesn't even overlap with the infusion sites. So that was funny. But the 2010s was also the decade that I switched from Medtronic to Tandem. So 2002 was Medtronic pumps. I was on the Paradigm pumps from there until 2017. And the primary reason that I switched to Tandem was that Medtronic wouldn't let me upgrade my pump without also going onto Medtronic sensor. And so by that point, I was on Dexcom. I had been on Dexcom for 2 years at that point. And I didn't want to switch to the Medtronic sensor because at that point, our mutual friend, Alexa, was like, don't do it. Just go to Dexcom. I'm like, okay.
I was on the Medtronic sensor. I remember they used to call it the Harpoon. Yep. And that hurt. Like, I remember just hemorrhaging blood out every time I had to like put it on, take it off. It never worked right. It was so finicky for like 5 or 6 years until I finally figured out how the Guardian was supposed to. Anyways.
Well, that is exactly why Alexa told me, just go straight to Dexcom. You won't regret it. And that's what I did. And if anybody who's listening remembers what the Dexcoms were in 2015, they were the G4, G5 sensors, which were the manual plunge mechanism to insert. So the G6, which is the sensor that like the vast majority of people on Dexcom are using right now, is that really nice applicator where you press the button and it shoots it down for you. The G4, G5, you had to manually do that thing. You had to put the plunger down yourself. And I remember the very first time I put one of these sensors on, I was by myself. I didn't have anybody to help me. I was putting it on my arm. Yes, Dexcom, I was putting your G4, G5 sensor on my arm. They've never been anywhere else. And I just remember having to YouTube how to put a G4, G5 sensor on my arm by myself. And I figured it out. I got used to, acclimated to the fact that I had to plunge this thing into my arm every 10 days. But that was my introduction to the sensor, was the G4, G5. And then when I switched in 2017 from Medtronic to Tandem, I was just blown away by the connection that it could handle between the Dexcom and the pump. And when they introduced Basal IQ, which was the predecessor to Control IQ, and Control IQ is the closed loop system that Tandem has, I remember the very first night that I had Basal IQ active, Basal IQ prevented lows. I slept the entire night without a single low. And when I woke up the next morning, the graph showed all the parts where it had suspended my insulin. I'm like, this is absolute magic. And so then I was just super excited about everything, like sensor related and, you know, pump related, and the fact that they could talk to each other. And so when they came out with Control IQ to give the corrections for anticipated highs, I was like stoked for that as well. So it's like, I'm on board with basically anything that Tandem will do with integrating on CGMs. It's fabulous. I love it.
That is awesome. I love that. So then the implantable CGM Eversense was also made in 2018, 2019. Did you already talk about this, Colleen, or were you ever on this one?
I was not.
Okay.
I've never done that one. I think that Eversense is in talks with Tandem to get it connected. We'll talk about this in a few bit, but Libre is integrating.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. I'd never used them. So I've been a Medtronic girly my whole life.
I've talked with some people who've used Eversense. And the thing with Eversense is you have to get it injected like it's injected it for you. You have to pay out of pocket for the injection. It's every 6 months to a year, depending on where you get it inserted. And I think it was initially only approved for US for 3 months. So you'd have to get injected, removed every 3 months instead of every six. But this one was first approved in the European Union. And they're the ones who really pioneered all of the improvements on that one. But that one, it's just for all the ladies out there, if you're familiar with the Nexplanon birth control implant, it's basically like that. They lidocaine your arm, they stick it in you, and then you wear basically the receiver as a patch over the implant site, and that's what reads your blood sugar. So that's the Eversense.
Nice. And then I was diagnosed in 2010, and I got my first pump in 2012, and it was the old motorcycle helmet, pink Medtronic pump. I think I still have it, actually. So yeah. And then moving on to the 2020s or current time, the Libre sensor is now integrating with Tandem, which is super exciting to hear because the Libre actually is really awesome. Like, I kind of want to get one just for when I don't want to be on the sensor full time or like when I'm traveling too. It's a really great tool to have.
I'm interested to see how it's going to work because the main difference between the Libre and the Guardian or the Dexcoms is that the Libre is a flash glucose monitor, which means up until now, you've had to basically scan the sensor with your phone to get the reading. Whereas with a Dexcom or a Guardian, it will constantly be pushing that data every 5 minutes to your receiver. So I'm interested to find out how that integration is going to work between the Libre 2 Plus, which is what they're calling it, and the Tandem. So I don't know. So people out there, if you have experience with being on a trial for the Libre 2 Plus and Tandem, please let us know. We would love to know. Yes,
please. And then also Medtronic is coming out with the, I cannot remember the name of it, but it's the new program where it's completely closed loop. You test in the morning, test in the afternoon, and you don't have to put in carbs, basal rate, or anything. It's fully automatic. I think it's supposed to come out in 2028, 2029, if I'm remembering that correctly, but I will put it in the show notes for the article that I just read about this too.
You know, the true test for that system is going to be how it handles pizza.
I know. I'm so excited for it. I'm so excited. Like, you're not even supposed to put in carbs. You just like eat and it does everything for you by itself.
That baffles me because we've been told for so long to pre-bolus. And if your pump doesn't know you're about to eat and you eat and then it's like, oh, I'm responding, then it's going to have that lag.
I'm going to have so much fun with it. Like, just my hectic, crazy lifestyle. I'm so excited.
Awesome. Anything else to add for diabetes through the decades? She's shaking her head no. All right. Now it is your turn. What is your favorite piece of diabetes trivia from the decade that you were diagnosed in? Remember, you control your diabetes. It doesn't control you. Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face to face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you. Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.